first game with the new coach, and people were already texting me tonight, Andrea. They were like, aren't you missing Coach Q? And you're like, hey, give it a game.
Yes, yes.
They came back from 3-0
yes.
to come close within striking distance.
Right, right.
Give it time.
And we love Q. He will always be a piece of our history and in our hearts and everything like that. But you know what? We're just, you know what? Let's just move forward. I thought they played okay tonight.
Exactly. So we'll see what happens
next.
That's
right. Yeah. Absolutely.
So we are always glad to be on after the Blackhawks, and more glad tonight because we have great guests in the studio.
Yeah, we do.
As many of you might know, my home club is Zanies over on Wells, celebrating their 40th anniversary, and you can't have that kind of celebration without comics like legendary Emo Phillips. Is that too much? That might be too much. I don't want to. Hi, Emo. How are you doing?
Hi.
Hello. Congratulations on everything, on just being one of the most highly regarded comics. It just, everyone that I talk to just starts to get very nervous that they're like, I don't know what to say to him if I meet him. He's just, you're just wonderful.
Well, I wish I could monetize that.
You should.
Wow.
And thank you for bringing back one of our favorites here as well, Dave Pasquese. Hey, Dave.
Hey.
Hey. Hi.
Dave is, he warms the crowd up. It's an absolute treat to see his stand-up act.
No.
He gets the audience in the most perfect mood for me.
I'm sure they're in a good mood, and everything helps in comedy. So everything kind of, there is a rhythm to it that I know you try to make sure that there's a certain tone, don't you? When you want people to have a good time?
Yeah. I thought I knew what the perfect opening act was. And then Dave opened for me. And I realized I was completely off.
That's lovely.
Did you think it was tumblers?
Oh, like the Jesse White tumblers.
I thought it would be like from a
like
Slavic
tumblers.
Country. Three or four tumblers holding holding each other up. And
that bouncing balancing board and stuff like that.
That's what I usually use. Yeah. So you're a lot more convenient.
Right.
You don't take up the whole dressing room. Doesn't smell like garlic after.
Well,
do you guys have to share a dressing room?
Yeah, we share. We
get two.
Yeah, we have two, that's but nice. We knocked down the wall between us.
Okay, that's good. Yeah,
that's
appropriate. Comfortable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why have walls? Doesn't seem right.
Why build walls?
I know that Dave is staying in town. He lives here in Old Town.
In Old Town, yeah.
And are they putting you up in a nice hotel, Emo?
Yeah, they put me at this beautiful hotel. I could hear the couple in the next room having sex. There's nothing wrong with that. It's why they give you the glass.
Right.
It's helpful.
I love to travel. Of course, I don't have a wife or kids at home, so I'm not getting the full pleasure. Right?
Yeah, oh, believe me.
It would be lovely to be getting away from someone.
That's why I spent so much time on the road. Oh, yeah.
You travel a lot, Dave?
A fair amount. I enjoy getting on an aircraft. I enjoy the pat down.
Yes,
that's why you wear your cargo pants.
Do you get singled out pretty often for the pat down?
Yeah,
or do you like
I opt,
volunteer?
I opt for it.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. You like pick me.
And also, there's a few key words that you can say to make sure it'll happen.
Oh, like what?
Oh, bomb.
Okay,
that'll do it.
Yeah, that often sets things off, as it were, into motion.
I'm trying to work. You know, Einstein had the unified field theory, and he spent the last years of his life trying to, something with gravity and magnetism and energy, trying to unify them all into one easy formula. And I'm desperately trying to have what I call a unified T-shirt theory, which is a T-shirt that will get you through airport security, but at the same time out of jury duty.
Oh, that's so funny!
You know? That would be so helpful. I love that. That sounds like something you could patent.
My sister had a T-shirt: "God never closes a door without opening a window." Yeah, great. Make fun of his OCD.
Oh God!
It's going to work out well for you.
Absolutely. I get to brag that I stayed up late eating snacks at a bed and breakfast in Woodstock, hanging out with Emo, talking about comedy, and one of my friends who is a journalist, she was like, I'm in my pajamas. This is surreal. I don't know what to think about this, but I think that when people meet you, they often have questions for you, like, what do you think about emo music?
Well, I made the name Emo famous in the 80s And now there's, as you know, a genre of music called emo. But to be fair, my dad, Bebop Phillips, suffered the same sad fate.
Man, it makes me want to sing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you listen to, Patty?
Oh, don't ask that question.
It's too late.
Oh, yeah. Ask yeah. her. Yes.
No, I can't unring that bell.
So,
I can't put the cat back in the bag.
So we
I
have,
can't put Grandma back in the coffin.
Yeah, Grandma, stay where you are. We have a segment called Patty's Appalling Lack of Musical Knowledge.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So what we do is we ask listeners, we give them about 10 seconds of a song, and right. they have to decide whether or not they think I'll know what song it is or who sings it. And chances are about 95% that I won't. And if I do, I'll yell it out before they have a chance to make the bet.
Right.
Because I'm so excited that I actually do know it. I was raised on comedy. I if you got in my car when I was in high school, I would have George Carlin, or I would have Richard Pryor playing on my you know, my cassette.
And your tape.
I had cassette, yes. Yeah.
And your
so
HR.
I just, I have more of an ear for music, which is why when I introduced you in Woodstock, I was talking about how much of an honor it always is to work with you. And the first time I met Emo, he was knocking on the back door of Zany's, and I popped the door open and screamed right in his face.
Oh, God.
And we're still kind of friendly to each other.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Well, I don't always remember my pants, but.
Right.
You were really cool about it.
Yes. Do you, I mean, because I'm just not that well versed in music. Do you have a particular, is there something that, I mean, I mentioned Indigo Girls, but that's kind of all I've got.
Yeah, I came up listening to the Grateful Dead and the Allman Brothers and stuff like that.
Nice.
I like that. Just, I enjoy listening to that music.
That's all you got? Just the Allman Brothers?
Just those
Brothers.
Two.
Yep, that's it. Anything outside of that? Yeah. How about yourself?
Dean Martin.
Oh.
I was 12 years old back in 1968, and he had the Dean Martin show, and he came out and told jokes and all these pretty girls, and he did sketches and sang, and it all seemed so effortless.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, I'm a fairly intelligent man. There must be some way for me to be in show business. why work?
Ta-da.
Apparently, it was actually effortless for him. There was no effort put into it. He
really?
Did not show up for, he got that show. He did not show up for rehearsal. It was part of his deal. It's like, and if I have to be another character, I'm just going to put on like a lab coat over my tuxedo, and I'm not going to rehearse. And it was without effort for him.
Well, it makes
it more impressive.
Yeah.
As we enter the holidays, I highly recommend his Christmas specials because he starts laughing during the monologue and like almost like he can't believe
he hasn't seen the jokes before.
Right.
It's true. He's amused by the whole thing.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Do you watch any of the big Christmas specials like the Judy Garland, the old ones? You know.
Is this a test?
No, it's not. But they're fun. They're all available on YouTube, and my friend and I like to have cocktails and watch all the old ones. And you get to see like all the, remember the Contact commercial with the cold medicine with the little, you get to see all like the shaving
the ads
cream.
And
yeah.
stuff.
Oh, wow. Yeah, those are fun to watch. But when you're at Zany's this week, I know that you know, you're going to be at Zany's on Wells tomorrow night as well.
So. In the original location.
I know.
Yeah.
And then in Rosemont, which I know you've also performed at.
Yeah, it's next to O'Hare.
Yes.
If anyone has a layover.
Right. That's a great venue.
Oh,
I love
it.
The whole complex
nice.
Now with the restaurants and mm-hmm. yeah, it's awesome.
And you could actually have, if you wanted a separate dressing room, you could just make David stay in the bathroom, and you could have the green room to yourself. Just lock him in there.
I want the one with the toilet.
You want to? Okay, there you go.
Right.
You lock him out. Yeah, that's fair enough.
No, just, Dave is the perfect companion on the road. Yeah,
it's good to have. Look, Dave's like, are we going on the road more?
Was that? Did I just get a job offer?
I think so, yeah.
You got a job offer.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Thanks very much.
Yay.
We'll, we'll negotiate. We'll work out the details during break and come back. Continue our conversation with Emo Phillips, who is appearing at Zany's headline of the Zany's on Wells. They've got two shows tomorrow night at 8 and 10:30, and then at Zany's in Rosemont on Saturday night. Go to zanys.com. And Dave Pasquese is appearing with him as well. You can check out the schedule again by go to zanys.com. Check out the calendar. calendar. More in a moment on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis on 720 WGN. I already feel like I'm being tested, Michael. I don't know, even though I know that you're not. We are hanging out with the incredible, the wonderful, the talented Emo Phillips, who is helping celebrate Zany's 40th anniversary, as well as the delightful Dave Pasquazi, who joins us. And it's one of those kind of, you know, those moments where I go, okay, well, Emo's the headliner, and we want to make sure that we, you know, are honoring everything that you bring because of the celebration. Zany's has been a Chicago destination for 40 years now. What do you like about performing at Zany's on Wells?
I love the smart crowds. I like smart people because smart people don't heckle. If a smart person doesn't like a show, he just blames himself for not having more assiduously researched his entertainment options. Right?
Right.
I mean, stupid people shout, "You suck," and smart people think, "I suck for not Googling him."
Right.
And if someone saw my show tonight, you could come back tomorrow or Saturday in Rosemont, and I guarantee you a completely different experience, because the whole time you'll be able to pretend you're psychic.
Yeah.
Isn't that cool?
That is a good feeling. Yeah. I like that a lot. It's empowering for an audience member.
This is why, by the way, congratulations on your new studio.
Do you miss our old one? It's a nice view, but...
Yeah, I have to say, it would be a lot freakier if someone walked past the window right now.
I have often said that.
That would have been in your old place.
I'm waiting for the drones.
Oh,
I'm waiting for the drones to be flying out the windows and taking photos of us.
But you can't beat this view.
It is a lovely view. And when Navy Pier is lit up, the Ferris wheel is dazzling as well. We also get fireworks on Wednesdays and Saturdays.
Every Wednesday and Saturday?
Every Wednesday and Saturday.
Is the water cannon right there?
It is. That is the water cannon, yes. So it's a good view, yes. I'm sorry we didn't get a chance to have Dave in when we were at the studio. I'm sure you were doing other shows.
Like that. That's too bad.
It was very nice. Yeah, we and you have there's a documentary on you. I think it's Stalking Emo. Has that ever hit the screens?
Yeah, there was a premiere of it in Georgia.
Uh-huh.
And it's still a work in progress.
Okay.
Because I'm still living. Right? So making it until I die.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. Because I'm not really in charge of it. These two fans wanted to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was very, very flattered. I call them emophiliacs. And they came to about 400 of my shows.
400?
Maybe 40. I'm bad with decimals. But still, I was very flattered.
It feels like a lot. Do you have other stalkers?
I had one lovely woman, and to us, see, stalkers is a word we use for other people's fans. But to us, they're just devoted, you know. Do you have time?
I do have time.
Well, this is kind of interesting. I was working in Louisville, Kentucky at a comedy club, and this nice young woman came to three of my shows. And then the next week I was in Peoria, and she drove this rickety truck all the way to Peoria. And then she had business Saturday afternoon, so she drove all the way back. And Saturday night, she drove all the way. And then the next week I was in Atlanta, and she drove, I think, thrice back and forth from Louisville to Atlanta. And then she farther and farther she would go, once to Canada, once to Utah. She came to about 50 of my shows, and I was very flattered.
You're very dedicated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she was very sweet. And
well, when someone makes that kind of connection, I often feel that audience members, it feels intimate. When we're on stage, it's just us talking. It feels like we're just talking to them.
Yeah.
Do you get that sense?
Say that again?
They feel like we're just talking to them sometimes. They feel a connection.
I don't try to put myself in her head.
No. I'm not recommending that either.
I'm just happy she came to the shows.
It's very, very sweet.
So it was like a... clearly she's a huge fan, but there was no obsession about it. It's just like, this is what she's doing. Never felt in any danger.
She's a very perceptive, intelligent young woman.
Wonderful. And with time.
With blessed, yes. With the luxury of, if not time, at least not needing sleep.
Right. Oh, yeah, one or the other.
Because she worked very hard during the day.
And she then drove all night.
Yeah.
And drove all night. Yeah. So,
well, you know,
if she had any luck at all, it was that she was not hurt
while driving. Well, while clearly driving. Sleeping while driving, right?
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
And so she's efficient as well. Sleeping and driving.
Good, take care of yourself.
The first driverless vehicle. So she's prescient.
Right. Wow, yes. Three things.
In all, yes. No, I was very flattered.
I'll bet, yeah.
Yeah.
That's quite dedication, quite the dedication.
It is. Yeah. Dave, have you found anybody who is, whether they were always messaging you or responding to everything you say?
No, I find a lot of people actually cross the street when I'm coming. So it's kind of the opposite.
No.
The opposite side.
Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I affect people, but the opposite way. Repellent.
Having said that, there are 7 billion people not stalking me.
Yeah.
Fair enough. That's a great way to look at it.
Yeah.
Right? For the one that does. Now, because you are a public persona, have you ever tried like online dating? Is it something you would want to explore?
I tried checking Tinder on Firefox on my Kindle, and it burst into flames. It was a Samsung.
You gotta be careful.
Dating. I use astrology to see if I'm compatible with a woman, and if she believes in it, we're not.
That makes sense.
The rules to live by. More in a moment on the Patty Baskin Show with Andrea Darlis. Emo Phillips is appearing at the Zanies on Wells, two shows on Friday. You can go to zanies.com for the information on that. Those shows, along with Dave Pasquazi, who is also entertaining. The audience is warming up the crowd, and we'll talk more with our guests when we come back in just a little bit. And they also have two shows on Saturday at Rosemont. You're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. Joining us in the studio, we have Dave Pasquazi and Emo Phillips. They're appearing at Zanies on Wells, two shows Friday night and two shows on Saturday night on Rosemont, actually, out in Rosemont. Great comedy clubs. And I don't know how much you guys had a chance to catch up with the press conference yesterday as the country was processing the results of our election. And not long before the president decided to announce that he had asked Jeff Sessions to resign, he held a press conference. It got a little chaotic. And at one point, he called on Acosta.
He did.
And there's a certain amount of drama to be expected in a moment like that.
Right.
He knows it's going to be a contentious question. I don't know if you've seen the shots, pictures where there you can see Sarah Huckabee Sanders like smirking as she watches this unfold. And I believe Jared is standing there with his arms
Jared
folded,
Kushner.
Just like watching all this unfold. Mm-hmm. And Trump said that he wasn't going to answer either one of Acosta's questions, Jim Acosta from CNN. And the intern who was tasked with moving the microphone around from journalist to journalist reached for it, and actually reached for it more than once. And all of a sudden it became Jim Acosta harassed and physically assaulted the intern. And so I wanted to talk about a piece that Rex Hubke has shared today. He's written this and actually has been circulating quite a bit because he did a little research on this as far as spreading of disinformation. Hey, Rex, how are you doing today? And what has the reaction been to your piece?
It got a lot of interest, actually. I was the whole thing was very weird, and it really sort of jumped out at me. I first just sort of commented on it on Twitter, and after that, looked into it a little bit more and contacted an expert on social media disinformation who's really been studying like a lot of the Russian Twitter bots and stuff that are being used to kind of sow discord and cause all kinds of problems. And it was interesting. What struck me when this all happened yesterday, personally as a journalist, I seeing somebody come and try to pull a microphone out of somebody's hand at a White House press conference is just ridiculous. I mean, it was, and so I sent out a tweet saying that I thought that person should be fired. I mean, that was, it's, you know, it was crazy for that to happen.
Right. You were wondering when the woman who reached for the microphone would be fired, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's we're paying her salary and, you know, she's in. And of course, I understand she was probably directed to do that or whatever. But nonetheless, I was particularly just kind of put off by the whole thing, as were many people. And then almost instantly, not quite, but I mean, there's a very short lag time. And all of a sudden, the replies to that tweet were all coming from Twitter bots, which if you're on Twitter, sadly, I'm on Twitter so much, it's almost painful, but but Twitter bots are basically dummied up accounts, and they pretend to be a real person, but they're not. I mean, it's something that's being operated sort of en masse by somebody somewhere, and you can tell it's a bot by the, like, it'll be a username where it's like a, you know, a name or a word, and then it's followed by like a bunch of random digits. That's a telltale sign. There's a ton of other ways of figuring out if something's a legitimate account or not. But anyway, all these bots all of a sudden started saying, no, Acosta assaulted her. And they also, some of them were also saying he karate chopped her, which also just kind of, I was like, that's a weird word. I mean, like the karate chop thing. I was like, that's a really odd way of describing what happened, because what happened was nothing even remotely like that. And so I saw that, and I'm like, huh, that's sudden to see all of this. But then shortly thereafter, my mentions on Twitter can be filled up even more with people saying this. And now it wasn't just bots. Now it was actual, like, Trump supporters and big time, you know, Make America Great Again accounts of real people parroting that same stuff and saying, no, he attacked her and blah, blah, blah. And then within hours, the White House puts out a statement effectively saying the same thing in slightly softer language, that, you know, he had laid hands on this woman who was just trying to do her job. And then in the meantime, while that's going on, this conspiracy website posts a doctored video that speeds the video up and does all this kind of tricky stuff with it, so that it looks like Jim Acosta from CNN is actually kind of like chopping at the woman's arm with his hand. Again, not what happened, but the video was doctored. And then a couple hours after that pops up, Sarah Sanders, the White House press secretary, tweets that video, the doctored video. And I was just like, oh my God, what has happened here? Within probably a span of maybe 6 hours, this went from, like, you know, nutty, bot-driven nonsense to the talking point of the White House, and then, you know, a doctored video that then gets legitimized because it's shared by the White House. And I said, this is absolutely nuts to see this happening.
Well, because it sounds like what you're saying is that the White House followed the bots and the spread of disinformation, because the president, they were very close to each other. President Trump and Jim Acosta were just feet away from each mm-hmm. other. So, you know, if anything, if the president felt that she had been assaulted, why didn't he say, hey, get your hands off of her? What kind of, you know?
Yeah, because there was nothing there. I mean, there, you know, anybody, any rational human who looks at the video can see. Now, I said in the column, too, like, you can argue whether Acosta was out of line. I don't personally think he was. I think he was doing the job of a journalist who is not letting somebody get away without answering the question. But people can have that argument about whether he should have sat, maybe he should have sat down, maybe he should have shut up after the president told him to stop and was clearly moving on. That's a separate conversation, whatever on that. But the idea that he did something to this woman who was trying to take the microphone is nonsense and just didn't happen.
Yesterday, Rex, I said, this is Andrea, I said yesterday that it was to me, the entire thing was just a circus. I mean, from start to finish to everybody involved, you know, I wish there was more order. I mean, if anything, I think we could take from that is that, yeah, you know, I don't think they should have had this young girl walking around with a microphone. It was very archaic. You know, it was just, and I know the news conferences, you know, are like that. I've been to hundreds of them. You have too.
Sure.
But in general, I just think that it was an absolute circus. And I think if anything could be learned from this, is that there should be some sort of a system or a numbering system. And you and I were talking about this last night, Patty. Right. Maybe a question and a follow-up and then move on. And I understand, mm-hmm. you know, Acosta's doing his job. He's trying to do a follow-up and whatnot. But, yeah, it was a circus watching that.
Yeah, yeah, the whole thing was ridiculous. Yeah. And you know, what's interesting is I personally don't – there were some people speculating that this whole thing was a setup by the administration. I personally don't think they're that clever. I think that, you know, for whatever reason, the, you know, this bots from somewhere, you know, started swarming on this right after it happened and pushing this false narrative. And the White House is more than happy to accept the false narrative. I mean, I don't personally believe that this was some, like, well thought out, you know, conspiracy. I think it was just that the White House saw this happen and was like, oh, cool, we're going to do this. It'll give us a good chance to knock Acosta. And but the result, though, I mean, is pretty chilling because they pulled his pulled Jim Acosta's credentials. And Jim Acosta, I mean, you know, you may not like his style, but he's a, I mean, he's the CNN's chief White House correspondent. I mean, he's a reputable, well-respected journalist, and they yanked his credentials for nothing, basically. And so it's they leveraged a, you know, a false narrative to, you know, sort of squash somebody's First Amendment rights, a member of the media's First Amendment rights. And it's bothersome, to say the least. I mean, people should be, people should not be happy about this.
Well, I know you talked to Clint Watts, who does is a research fellow at the Foreign Policy Research Institute, an Army veteran and former FBI special agent who served on the Joint Terrorism Task Force. Of course, I'm reading from the very first paragraph of your piece in the Tribune today.
Yeah, sure.
But did he have any thoughts on how we confront this? How we sort of, is there an alternative and how to sort of combat the spread of disinformation?
Well, I mean, the thing he said, which I wish most people kind of automatically knew, but I guess they don't, is don't trust what you're seeing on social media. Find reputable sources, which means newspapers, news radio, news outlets that have a reputation. I mean, his point was you don't want something that isn't coming through a filter, and filters are good. I mean, there's a reason for editors, and there's a reason for newspapers that have standards that aren't going to publish something that's completely bonkers. So that was really, I mean, unfortunately, there isn't a whole lot else you can do until the social media platforms themselves start figuring out a way to better police this kind of thing. And one, a big part of the reaction I've gotten from people who are outraged by this is, come on, Twitter, why are you not doing more to restrict these bots that are, again, I mean, I'm not an expert by any stretch of the imagination, and if I could pick up on what was happening, I'm quite sure that the people running Twitter could very easily see and do away with these various accounts and stuff like that. And that's another thing that Clint, I mean, the reason I reached out to Clint was because, okay, this was my observation, and as Rex Huffy layman, nobody, know nothing journalist, you know, and I talked to him because I wanted to make, he studies this stuff specifically, and he's testified before the Senate Intelligence Committee on the Russian interference in the election. I mean, he's a smart, smart guy. And he agreed. I mean, he basically, you know, he saw similar behavior and said it shows all the signs of the way, you know, disinformation campaigns on Twitter and other social media sites work. Mm-hmm. So yeah, but as far as what to do about it, it's basically just don't believe everything you read on
Dave,
Twitter.
You know, I agree with you. Hi, this is David Pasquazi. I agree with you that this is concerning, to say the least. Is there a possibility that the other members of the press in solidarity wouldn't stop covering the monster?
It's funny because in the early days of the administration, as soon as it became apparent how blatantly they were going to be lying, I think it started with the inauguration crowd sizes, mm-hmm. And that nonsense. A lot of people started floating that, and I was sort of stubbornly saying, well, no, you can't not cover this. I mean, you know, it's sort of our responsibility as journalists. But I have to say, especially after this, I've really come around, and just I don't see how they can't. I don't see how they do anything.
It's clearly merely lies and propaganda. Mm-hmm. That's all it is. So why would you participate in spreading that? I mean, it seems irresponsible of all media to continue to do that.
Yeah, and especially in this case, I think they need to come together and take a stand, because this was really this is just ridiculous. I mean, for the press secretary, the White House press secretary, to send out a doctored video that is mm-hmm. intended to basically make a member of the media look like he did something that he didn't do, That's pretty high level crazy.
Dangerous. So. I think it's dangerous.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that too. Yeah, sure.
Well, Rex, I want to thank you so much for staying up late. I know you had a long day. Everyone should follow Rex on Twitter. Hopefully you're for real and not a bot once you do follow. Fingers crossed. And when you do have a chance, we'd love to have you in studio sometime as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to do it. Thanks so much, you guys.
Thank you, Rex.
All right. Have a great night.
You too. More with our guests when we come back on 720 WGN. Zanies is celebrating their 40th anniversary, and celebrating along with them is one of Zanies' greatest comics to ever grace the stage, is Emo Phillips, and opening for him this week is Dave Pasquese. And we were listening to that conversation with Rex Hubke, and a lot has changed in the last few years. And sometimes people think, the best days are behind us. Other people think, well, maybe the best days are in front of us. I have to know, Emo, if you had a time machine, would you go backwards or forwards?
I would go forwards. As far as I can go, to see if the post office was truly sincere about those forever stamps.
Hold their feet to the fire.
Yes. Hold their feet to the fire. That was a chilling conversation.
It was interesting.
You know the movie, the book 1984?
Oh, yeah.
George Orwell, yes.
This would be a good prequel. There must be a prequel to that book. We're living the prequel right now.
So 2018 is a prequel to 1984?
That does
in
not
your
make,
machine.
If
in
I
your
had
machine.
A time machine.
Yes.
Oh, I broke my time machine.
Oh, no.
But I do think things are better now in 2018 than they'll be 10 years from now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's not optimistic.
No.
But some things are nice, though, about 2018.
Okay.
We can't look at the bad things all the time.
No.
You could go into any restaurant and take pictures of your food without everyone thinking you're mentally ill.
That's finally.
Finally. Finally.
It's true.
What else? There's a lot of pressure on young women these days. Sadly, there's a lot of pressure to lose their virginity. Not as much as the old days with the sacrifices.
That's excellent motivation.
It is excellent motivation. Yeah, those volcanoes are, that'll get any woman in bed.
It's an either or.
Either or. Either this volcano.
Yes. Or.
Or Emo Phillips. It's a lateral move.
I was never presented with those options.
No. Coin flip.
I mean.
No.
No.
You had your chance when I came to the door without the pants.
No, and I wasn't thinking. What
all
was
she did
I
was
thinking?
Scream.
Was
all you did was scream.
I know sometimes you hear that in the middle of the night.
I hear that scream to this day.
Sorry about that. It's been like 20
but
years.
But Zanies, no one knows this, but I was the first comic to book the club, believe it or not. It used to be a strip club run by the great Rick Hewitt.
Crystal Pistol, was that the name? I think so.
Okay. And I had a comedy club once a week in Downers Grove called Jerome's. And these, in the Zanies at that time, they were just purchased by, two accountants and a lawyer, or two lawyers and an accountant, some cool mix.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to start a comedy club. And they said, Emo, will you book our club? And I booked all my friends. And it was amazing.
Wow.
I booked Del Close.
Oh, wow.
He did a show there. I booked a lot of comics that, wouldn't even be the doorman today.
Wow.
To headline. Sometimes we had no people in the audience.
Just to take turns listening to each other?
Yeah.
John Caponera tells stories of being on stage, getting off stage and running to the back and making drinks.
Oh, my God.
And then going back on. He would host the show and also be the bartender.
Wow.
Oh, I didn't know he did that.
Yeah. You two are woven into the fabric of Zanies even more than people do.
I didn't know we could do that. See, now you know.
It wasn't offered. It wasn't offered as a bonus to you.
No, what is your story? Do you have stories?
About Zanies?
Yeah. You were Second City.
He met Patty Vasquez there.
See, was Patty Vasquez there.
Yeah.
Second City and... See, the comics and the improv players were like...
To fight. Was like brawl on Wall Street. Every Saturday night, we'd brawl.
Yeah. Like, at Burton Place
like
and have
it out. The
cattlemen
versus the sheep herders.
Which are we? Are we the cattle herders or the sheep herders?
Oh, I'd like to think you're sheep.
Well, the sheep. Right. No, the improv. Follow the leader.
And you go to the weird place next door.
Right?
Can I just say what you just said? I said, do you know the song, Patty?
And I said, should I?
It's okay. David doesn't know what
David,
he's saying.
Do you know what song this is? Can you hear it?
Feelings.
Oh, I would have known that one.
That's funny.
Oh, I would know like Sonny and Cher, like I got you, babe. I would know that one, especially because that actually brings us back to Dave Pasquese, who was in the movie Groundhog Day.
We've come full circle.
We have. Yeah. It's like it just happened all over again.
Day.
It is. What song was that, and why should I know it?
That was Rush.
Okay. Okay.
Just kind of a famous band, famous 70s song.
Okay, I definitely don't know that.
No,
there Michael, you. What's it called?
Limelight by Rush.
Limelight.
Okay. Limelight. Yeah, no.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, no.
The other one was Crazy, wasn't it? Earlier?
Yes, good call by Gnarls Barkley.
Yeah, Gnarls Barkley, Crazy.
And
I know my acid takers.
Look at you, Mr. Millennial.
I do believe earlier you also played some Sam Cooke.
That is correct.
Because someone texted it to me. Thank you very much.
Now they know they're going to help you cheat at the game.
I will also be honest when people are helping. That was our friend John Harris, who put together the comedy festival that we had, the Laugh Stock in Woodstock, Illinois, that Emo and I performed at earlier this year. It was a lot of fun. So, yes, you can continue to... It's not even like Stump Patty.
I got stumped too, though. I tried to help you at one point, and I thought someone was Green Day, and who was it? It wasn't Green Day, and
it was Boston.
Boston.
Mm-hmm. Six of one, right? Half dozen of the other. I'm not sure how that math works out, Emo, but that's the way I've always learned it. Baker's dozen.
Baker's dozen? What is that? Is
13.
13? Mm-hmm. Why is it 13?
I think
Why
they threw
it 13.
I don't know.
Laniop? Laniop.
Yeah. They don't.
Laniop is in New Orleans.
Oh.
You know, it's just a little, you know, it's like if you, I don't know, have a meal and they give you a little piece of candy.
All right. Just a little something extra.
For Laniop.
I feel like you're making something up.
It's a New Orleans thing.
Oh.
I don't travel as much as you do.
I got that from Mark Twain's Life on the Mississippi.
Mm. I was going to say, you got, if I thought you were going to stop it. I got that from Mark Twain, and you're not that old.
No.
I'm not going to believe that.
He gifted
pulling
it to
my
you.
Leg.
Mm-hmm. No.
Mm-hmm.
I actually, when I played the Weird Al tour, the first theater, we did 77 theaters, and I did half an hour each night. So it's Amy's, I'm doing an hour, so it's still weird talking twice as slowly.
Whatever it takes.
But the first theater in Poughkeepsie, which I think Al chose just for the funny name of the town, was from 1879, and Mark Twain played that same theater.
I saw that show.
Wonderful.
You were great. Not the Poughkeepsie one, but that tour.
He saw me at the Vic.
Oh, great. What a wonderful theater perform in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love
every
it.
Every show is amazing, and Al was, he's so amazing.
You both are. It's an incredible show. I'm so jealous of the folks that got to catch that one. I love that.
I was hoping you'd say that.
Now, I have
to... Speaking of Appleton.
Oh, yes. One of my favorite clubs and towns anywhere, by the way. Have you had a chance to perform in Appleton, Wisconsin?
It's the Skyline, right?
Yes. It's a dazzling. They have a disco ball. It's the only comedy club I know of with a disco ball. When will you be there?
I'll be there the second week of January.
If I may, do you like pizza?
I do love pizza.
They have a place called Frank's Pizza Palace.
You show me a man that doesn't like pizza, and I'll say, "Well, what's your point?"
Well,
I'll just wonder why you brought it up.
Strange errand we just went on.
It was.
Yeah.
So is Frank's Pizza?
Frank's Pizza Palace.
Palace.
And Dave, you said you've been there before?
I have. Isn't that where, didn't Houdini grow up in that town?
He did.
Okay, yeah.
It's in McCarthy.
Oh yeah,
Tim McCarthy, yeah. They're in this. I think they're in the same building for their museum too.
Houdini had a horrible thing. He said my greatest escape, leaving Appleton.
Oh, well done, sir.
No,
that's what he said. Yeah. But I love it there.
It's a great town,
is it?
So if you needed, if you were on the fence about visiting Appleton the second weekend of January,
right?
Maybe this will induce you if you're a fan.
Get off the fence.
Get off the fence.
Unless it's a spiked fence.
Yeah, right. That'd be more difficult. You should get off it
If
quicker.
I could get someone off a spiked fence, I've done my job.
Yeah. And if there's pizza there.
That's right. The Houdini Museum. Yeah.
Houdini Museum.
Yes. There's a bar there called Cleo's where it's Christmas time all year long.
Wow.
Isn't there an old paper mill there too?
Yes. Yeah. They actually,
there's a lot going on there.
I know this town way too well. Willem Dafoe is also from there, but that's not, they don't have a museum for him yet.
Well, we got to get that.
I'm saying. Yeah, get it all done. Maybe when you're there next time, you can work on that.
It'll be my my mission.
Mm-hmm. That was one of the first clubs I was that promoted me. And when you're asking about the paper mill, they also it was the first place I'd ever seen, because I was in my 20s. They had converted an old paper mill into mixed income housing. So you paid according to what you could afford. I had never heard of that before. I mean, because here we'd had projects and things like that. And that was the first, it was like, this is in the 90s. And people loved living in that kind of renovated, repurposed building. You and I stayed in a building that was repurposed, not together.
Not that time.
Well, because comics, we stay in comedy condos.
Oh, yeah.
And you were there the week before I was in Erie, Pennsylvania at Junior's Last Laugh.
Yes.
That's a great old building, too.
Junior's Last Laugh. It's when the check doesn't cash.
Exactly.
That was a nice club.
Isn't it? Is it gone?
No, but the condo's gone.
Oh, no. Yeah. I didn't know
we
that.
We stayed at in Woodstock.
Yes, we did it at the Bed and Breakfast where Bill Murray stays in the movie Groundhog Day.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And then again, Dave Pasquese, who is in the movie as the therapist.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You listened very well. I thought that you were well cast in that as well.
Thank you very much.
Welcome. And there wasn't that breakfast. It was almost too decadent. Like, they just kept bringing us different plates of things. They had every element of a breakfast that you could possibly want, from the meat to the savories.
Oh, it was amazing.
It was.
I love the gold shavings on the croissant.
The croissant, and you know
that
what
made it really good, I thought.
And it was also, guess what, very photographable.
Instagram.
That's nice.
Yeah.
That's nice. Yeah. That's, again, really so fortunate to be alive today.
We are alive.
We are alive today.
Rhinoceroses are becoming extinct. Yeah, but look, see, when I take a picture, it moves a tiny bit.
Oh.
Now, do you like animals?
I love animals.
Do you?
Don't wear fur. Did you know that a single fur coat takes 14 trees just for the protest signs?
No.
I love it. Well, you know, Patty, when I was a child, our neighbor down the street, there's always one rich woman on the block. I guess not. But anyway, it's not really axiomatic, is it? Rich to us, you know. I was wondering why that proverb never caught on. I guess it doesn't.
It's not true.
I've been trying to make it work for all these years.
Not on like an inspirational sign.
Yeah. Well, anyway, there was a rich woman on the block, and I returned her Pekingese, and she gave me a $20 reward. And, you know, a lot of boys my age would have bought candy or comic books. I went right out, and I bought a second trap. And soon I had the biggest lost pet finding service in Downers Grove.
Oh.
So don't say I'm not a capitalist.
No,
I wouldn't. No. I don't think anybody here did.
When there's four people, one will say you're not a capitalist. See, that's another proverb.
Right.
Maybe just not these four people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not these four. It's not on a t-shirt.
Proverbs must be always working.
Yeah, based in truth, at least.
They must be applicable, as opposed to an aphorism.
Oh.
I've been getting into the aphorisms of the great Frenchman La Rochefoucauld. Have you heard of him?
That would sound like a swear.
It did.
Can we
check?
La Rochefoucauld.
Why are you saying it? You think the FCC can't speak French?
We're in safe harbor.
Right.
If Emo says it, I think we're okay.
Do you want to hear some of his?
Yes.
I'll do them in English.
Okay. get it ready.
Dumb it down for you folks.
Right.
Neither death nor the sun can be stared at for any length of time.
That seems to ring true.
Well, I don't.
Isn't that funny?
It's true.
Not entirely true.
Yes.
I mean, I could stare at the sun for a while.
You can.
I'll damage myself. But
yeah.
There's an Italian one that I always like.
What's yours?
The children of the cat eat mice.
Oh, that is true.
Yeah, like the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that one.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Children the cat also eat mice. Kittens also eat mice.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Like father, like son.
Do they eat mice? Kittens?
Old cats eat the same things that little cats eat.
And eventually they can.
That reminds me of the proverb from Shakespeare. The cat would eat fish, but does not want to wet his paws.
Huh.
Oh.
So he's got to be a little more creative.
Like ingenuitive. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't want to come.
He wants the fish, but doesn't want to get his paws wet.
Right.
These are good.
You like cake and eat it too? Is that what it is?
No.
No.
I was going to say that's a good comparison, Dave.
But my favorite LaRouche Foucault.
Thanks.
I like
yes.
that.
My favorite, I'm not going to lie, just to help you save face.
Never do that.
My favorite LaRouche Foucault, we all have the strength to overcome the misfortunes of others.
Oh, I absolutely do. I know that's for certain.
Isn't that sweet?
Every single day.
That's true,
You don't even have to dig down that deep, I find.
Right. Not even hard.
It's not at all.
No.
It's Dave Pasquazi. You can catch Lodge 49 on AMC, and Veep is in production in January. He's opening for the one and only Emo Phillips, who is helping celebrate Zany's 40th anniversary. The Zany's on Wells has two shows tomorrow night featuring these incredible performers, and I know you have a lot of fun. Before you go, by the way, Dave, someone wants to know if you're related to the Pasquazi flower folks.
Yeah, Home and Garden.
Oh, there you go.
Absolutely. That's Ed.
Is that over on Wells?
No, they're up in the suburbs.
Up in the suburbs.
Every time you come in, you're related to someone. It was Jen Zanotti the other day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They're
connected.
That's right. And so Emo and Dave will be at the Zany's on Wells, 8 and 10:30, and then at the Zany's in Rosemont for two more shows. Go to zanys.com for information. Follow Emo. You're welcome to if you want to drive from
Louisville to Atlanta.
And then to Canada, you're welcome to. But also, you can follow him on Twitter at Emo Phillips.
Yeah.
Yes. And Dave Pasquazi. Also, is it at Dave Pasquazi?
D. Pasquazi.
D. Pasquazi. Because somebody else already got Dave?
I don't know.
All right,
maybe
then.
I was just lazy.
Let's get it over with.
If anyone tries to write me on Twitter or Facebook, don't think of me as not replying. Think of me as allowing you to have the last word.
Right. That makes sense.
Just like now. Mm-hmm. Thank you guys so much. More in a moment on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. This was too much fun. From comedy to theater, Andrea. We just talked about Zany's Comedy Club, and now we turn our attention to the Factory Theater. They have their production of The Darkness After Dawn, and we are so thrilled to welcome to the studio playwright and artistic director for the Factory Theater is Manny Tamayo. And am I saying your last name correctly? Manny Tamayo? Come on, closer to your microphone. We want to hear your wonderful, rich voice.
That is completely correct. It's Tamayo.
Tamayo. Hello. Pleasure to meet you. And starring in the play as Rosemary is Allison Kane. Hi, Allison. How are you doing?
Hi, great. How are you?
I'm very well. Did I also say your name correctly?
You said it exactly right.
I'm thrilled to have you guys in the studio. This is a very dramatic play that you guys have. This has murder and mystery and cons and... Mm-hmm. All kinds of, which actually sounds like a fairly Chicago play.
Yeah, exactly.
In a strange way.
Very similar.
Tell us about the story behind this story, I guess, Manny.
All right. It's very much, it's not drama so much. It is drama, but it's not drama as much as it's supposed to be kind of a noir.
Ooh.
You know, purposefully, just a little campy, a little over the top. Taking itself very seriously, but enough twists and turns to let you realize that it's all pulp anyway.
Okay, so it's a noir detective mystery.
It is.
Is what you've got.
It's a little bit of, just in the description, dial in for murder-ish a bit, as, you know, there's different suspects. Ooh. And the list dwindles.
I would go there. I wouldn't say that it expands that far.
Uh-huh.
It's not as clever as dial in for murder.
don't tell.
No. It's you have to see for yourself. But honestly, it's a ride. It's a hoot.
Have you created a similar play like this, or what do you tend to be drawn to in your storytelling?
I always kind of hit in that neighborhood.
Yeah.
It's one of those things you can't shake. It's kind of like, you know, you always want a sausage pizza, you know. And so this is my sausage pizza.
Sausage pizza.
Yeah.
Pizza with a little garlic.
With a little garlic, yeah. Maybe some green olives if I can get them. But.
Oh, me too.
Yeah.
Okay, hold on a second. Yeah. Nobody but me seems to like green olives on their pizza.
Green olives.
Oh, I will too.
Andrea,
I like green olives. Yeah.
Rosemary? Okay.
Yeah. Anytime you want a pizza with olives, Patty, I am in.
Are you all in? Okay,
all
Michael,
in.
Are you a green
in.
Olives pizza kind of guy? I know you like pineapple. How about
love
green olives?
Love the pineapple. You know what? But I'm a garbage can, so just put it all on.
Oh,
Green olives. Right.
This is awesome.
Okay, good. I you know what? I've never been able to say it out loud. Well, I like anchovies, but that I expect.
I do too. Oh, so do we, actually. Yeah.
No, come I'm serious. On. I'm Greek.
What?
For real.
Yeah. Definitely.
The Greek? Yeah.
Anchovies.
Yeah.
What?
For sure.
Yeah. 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 Okay. Always
we
a jar.
Are literally, yes. We're going to get pizza together.
I think
we
so.
Are. It's going to happen.
Steve always tells this story. First of all, my parents always ordered anchovy pizza.
Sure.
So when Steve would come over, they knew he hated it. So they would get it half anchovy, half plain. And he's like, they never understood.
You can still.
You can taste it. Oh, yeah. And they touch all the pieces.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
And then there used to be this great oven, wood oven pizza place. And we ordered this pizza one time, and I was like, this is amazing. And Steve was like, this is the most disgusting pizza I've ever had. And we looked at the closer at the description, it had anchovy paste on it.
Oh, oh yeah. Fantastic. And you loved it.
I was like, this is the best pizza I've ever had. Ever. Oh, I love this.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Sorry, living in pizza world. Now I'm that's hungry.
I know. Now we should have ordered one.
We're hungry.
A couple of anchovy pies.
I'm saying. Right. I get nervous, though, because they're not refreshing their stock of anchovy that often.
No, they've been in that oil forever.
Yeah, they're like,
so true.
They're waiting for us. So like, oh, God, Andrea and Patty's going to order their pizza. I'm sure that Phil's Pizza Dura only kept their anchovies for my family.
It was a nice sheen.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Vasquez, okay, oh, there
right.
they go.
It's coming. Fine, then. Now, Rosemary, this is a bad day for you in this play, isn't it?
Yeah.
It doesn't go well for you in Darkness After Dawn.
No.
It's a lot of darkness for you.
It's a lot of darkness. Yes. A lot of darkness. Yeah, I get to start the show at 11. It's a really great place to start. Yeah.
And so, you know, in this, I know that you've worked so much in theater, both on stage and developing projects, helping productions get on their feet. How was this project for you, getting into this noir mystery?
You know, this was interesting because Manny was purposely doing some writing that he was seeking ambiguity, which is great from, I think, a writer's perspective. But as an actor, that's challenging because you can't be ambiguous. You have to know what you're doing. And so a lot of it was trying to figure out what her trajectory was,
right?
What she was doing, who she was lying to, who she was telling the truth to, who she was doing that to at the same time. So it was a really interesting journey to figure out what was going on with this person. And I'll tell you, this one came close to the wire. I think I was the night before opening night. I was like, I'm not sure what she's doing. And so it was a little scary.
That's a weird moment on stage, isn't it? When you're not sure, because you're not sure what are you incorporating, what is authentically landing.
Yeah.
Do you self-conscious that way?
Yeah, without a doubt.
And then, but then the director will be like, no, it's exactly what I want. And you're like, are you sure?
Yeah.
It's
and, a lot of trust. And everyone say, no, I think I see what you're doing. And you say, but I'm not sure. So you just kind of have to both trust your team.
Right.
But also you have to listen to yourself. And I've been around the block a bit. So you have to really kind of, you know, get to that point where you think, you know, what the most important thing with new work is that you're telling the story.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that you're telling the story that the writer wants you to tell.
There you go. Yeah.
That's, you know, those are what, you know, my job is as an actor.
Yeah.
Is to do that. So
Manny, you're the writer. I'm just curious. So you're writing this, and when you see it actually being acted, you know, before opening night and whatnot, do you ever change anything? Do you ever say, you know what, I like the way maybe your actors portray it in a different way and then start changing? Or is it pretty much what I've written is steadfast?
No.
It changes a lot.
And, the actors have a lot to do with it. The collaborative process at the Factory Theater, what we do is we bring it all together and we get opinions, we get feedback. And, you know, I guess the rule of thumb is if more than three people say, hey, man, this doesn't make sense, then you have to go in there and make sure that it makes sense.
Right.
And so a lot of that happens in the collaboration process in order to get this on its feet and produced and ready to go.
Yeah.
So I do change. I can be a stickler on certain things. There's always like that line or, you know, one bit of dialogue.
Right.
You go, you know what? No. They're going to have to say it this way. And if they don't, then, you know, it's all, I'm out of here.
All bets are off. You have your, you protect some of your babies.
You have to.
Yeah.
He also kills a lot. We cut 21 pages.
Ooh.
From start.
Yeah.
From Jump Street.
It gets cut a lot. I mean, that's the thing.
It's,
you know, and you do, things die all the time. And you go, yeah, it really is. It's like your baby. So little pieces of it, it just gets cut, you know, and a lot of those cuts I make.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always in complete control of the cuts that I make, and as long as I have that to go home with and to go to bed with and wake up and have my coffee and say, hey, you know what, I did it.
Right.
Even if it was heavily influenced,
I still did it because I made the decision to do that.
Well, I have to make this decision because someone whispered in my ear, do this. More in a moment on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlos. We're hanging out with our friends from the Factory Theater. We're talking about their new production of The Darkness After Dawn, which is running now through December 1st. That's at the Factory Theater at 1623 West Howard Street. You can go to thefactorytheater.com. More in a moment on 720 WGN. I get very excited when I actually know a song.
You did. I love when Michael plays the bump music and you say who it is.
I can't tell you what song it is, though. It's definitely Rolling Stones.
Yes.
I can definitely see Mick Jagger.
Brown Sugar.
Really?
Brown Sugar.
Is that really
Brown
a song?
Sugar is
Are you just messing with me? That's the name of the song?
No, that's the name. Okay.
We would be horrible guests to do that. Be like, yeah, it's a Sugar.
You would not be horrible guests. It would be.
There's always that one guy that's going to be like, you know what? It's Brown Sugar by the Rolling Stones.
The thing is, that doesn't even sound familiar to me. I just knew it was the Rolling Stones.
At least you knew that.
Yes,
that's
I got
half
that.
The battle.
It was just very distinctive.
Yes.
We are hanging out with our friends from the Factory Theater. Manny Tamayo has written a new play there, a detective noir mystery. I feel like the way you describe it, there also seem to be hijinks involved. It seems to be the way.
There's a couple hijinks.
Hijinks. A little bit of hijinks that ensue. And this is at the Factory Theater running through December 1st. You can go to thefactorytheater.com. And starring in the play apparently his wife, because you just told us that off the air.
Yes.
Rose, playing Rosemary, is our Allison Kane. And that led to another discussion off the year, but I have to. Well, first of all, how many productions have you done together in a similar fashion?
I think this is our second in these roles, but we wear a lot of different hats. So
sure.
I produce, he produces, he directs. He's directed me in something he's not written. So I maybe we've done six or seven.
Yeah, we've worked together several times directly in this capacity as writer and actor.
Yeah.
I wrote a show a few years ago that Allison was in. It was called Dead Wrong, and it was great. So there you go.
Well, and there must be, you know, the first people probably wonder about how much spending that much time together will have an effect on you. But at the same time, you also know what the expectations are, what the boundaries are, how much you can trust each other. Right? That has to come into play a lot too, Allison.
Oh, huge.
Right.
Huge.
Right, because you're vulnerable when you're
Absolutely.
On stage. Yeah.
Big time. Yeah. And he's Manny's a very bold writer. And so the places that he needs his characters to go to are very vulnerable and very scary places. So, he asks a lot of his actors. Actually, there's in rehearsal, there's oftentimes where we're like, oh, Manny, how could you do this to us? You know, but it's great. It's really challenging.
I was going to say, when you do you bring it home? I know I asked you this off the air too. Or is it kind of like that's kind of the safe space? Whereas I need some time. Okay, cool. I'm going to the kitchen.
You know, it's funny. When you said that, I was thinking about it. It is the safe space because you do get home and you're like, okay, who's making coffee? You know, for the morning, or who's got the cat?
Yeah.
You know, you just kind of I need to get away from the creative place.
You definitely don't want to get into an argument based on something that happened in fiction land.
Right.
Because it's
that's smart.
It's not something to wake up with.
That is smart. Yeah.
On the other hand, though, when you're in the throes of writing something, you're also hearing those voices on a pretty regular basis. They're, you know, you are trying to let those be free, right? You're setting them down to paper or imagining, like, throughout your day.
Yeah.
And then when you're working on the process of living that, what a strange world to be in together.
Well,
and wonderful in many ways.
It's great. It's also I never want to let any writer down. Because that's my job as someone who does new work, but then you add another layer where the writer is your husband, and so you don't want to let him down. So there is an extra weight, I think, on me in a process like this, because it's his work.
It's like you are proud of each other, but you want to continue to be proud of each other and do your best work.
Yeah,
I think that's cool.
Yeah. I don't want to break his show.
And at the same time, I don't ever want to lead her down a crazy path or something that's not, you know, I mean, there's never going to be an argument that says, you know what, this is what I'll do.
Right.
Wait till you see what happens on page 16.
Right. Yeah, right. No wonder that ended up on the floor.
Right. Yeah, right?
Yeah,
Why am I being dragged across a set up by my hair? I don't understand.
Damn it, I should never have said that to him.
Yeah. I mean, it's there. It's always, the temptation is there. It's
Manny.
Oh, He's kidding.
I was raised Catholic. Come on.
Well, you've had how many productions? How many performances now of this particular play?
With previews, 8. Is that right? 6 days.
Yeah, it's only been 2 weeks. We're going on to our third week, starting tomorrow, and it's going to be a good time. I guarantee. Bet.
I like how assertive you were about that. Tomorrow.
Tomorrow, Friday night at 8 p.m. at the Factory Theater at 1623 West Howard in beautiful Chicago.
Is that in Rogers Park?
It is in Rogers Park. Right at the end of the line.
Yeah. Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
You can take the red line.
You can take the red line. It's so easily accessible by public trans, CTA.
What kind of space is the Factory Theater? Let people know what that's like, to because so many of the smaller theaters and the neighborhood theaters are they're deserving of so much more attention.
Yeah.
You know?
It's definitely what you would call storefront theater. Mm-hmm. This is a thing in Chicago, for those not familiar with theater. This is a storefront theater. It's literally something that could have been a dollar store or a laundromat or something, and they gut it out, and they put a lot of seats in there, and they say, hey, come on in. There's not a lot of seats. There's probably about 70 total.
That's great.
That is great.
I think that's a perfect size.
It's intimate.
It's so intimate, and it's you know, for people who don't go to these types of theaters, it's an experience all in itself.
Yeah. Yes.
You can get in there, and you can be so close to the actors, and it's really, you can tell if you're watching a good actor or not. Mm-hmm. So that's always,
that's a great point.
You know what, even if you don't want to see theater, go to see the actor screw up. I mean, that's it at the end of the day, right?
Manny's Mr. Positive, in case
you
No, yeah. No.
That's great.
Anyway, I mean, the intimacy is so great. You're right there. You're you could touch them if you reached out and leaned forward a little bit. Not that you should, but
please refrain from touching the performers.
Don't touch the performers.
Is that part of the announcements? Please turn off your phones and
definitely.
Do not
don't touch me. The actors.
Don't touch them. Have you had anything unique happen during this production in the more than 2 weeks you've been on stage?
Well, yeah. I mean, it is a small theater, and we often get people. I mean, one of the great things about the Factory is that it's very accessible, and it's a theater that people who don't typically go to theater go to. And so sometimes that means that people don't know, you know, stuff that you should or should not do in a theater. And
like, don't answer the phone.
Don't answer the phone, yeah. Or you know, when you're talking, you know, we can hear you. But the talking is commenting to each other. So like, for me as a performer, you could feel when someone's in it. Like, so they are with you. They want to hear the story, and you say, okay, well, I'm going to keep telling the story. So, you know, but the Factory also, you know, you can bring beer in if you want. And so, you know, people will, you know, open their beers and like, all right.
Yeah. And, you know, and everybody knows that.
It's great. So it's a really, it's a live experience, not just for, I mean, it's a live experience, obviously, to watch the show, but you're participating in something that a bunch of people are.
Right.
And it's fun. And you never know what's going to happen. And that all affects, you know, what happens on stage.
I think it's part of the experience.
It's great. Mm-hmm. It's wonderful. It's really fun.
By the way, the listener wanted to know if this was the theater that Nick DiGilio used to be involved in.
Yeah, absolutely.
That is, yes.
Yeah. In fact, I was just in the hallway talking to Nick DiGilio.
Yeah.
And it was a treat for me because I haven't talked to Nick in a long time.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to get Nick to come out and see the show because I think he'd love it. It's definitely in his wheelhouse.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that, I mean, you know, performers like Nick and writers like you guys are the smaller theaters, the intimate theaters, the intensity of it. Black and Blue is one of my favorite plays that I've ever seen. I don't know if Andre had a chance.
Mm-hmm. The Cub and White Sox.
One of the great plays in Chicago history. And I hope that Nick knows that. I'm assuming that he does. There's just such a wonderfulness about, you know, like the Gift Theater in Jefferson Park
and
the kinds of productions that people can enjoy and maybe, as you mentioned, aren't aware of what that storefront theater experience is like.
Yeah.
It's great. And the reason I ask about like things that have happened over the production is that a lot of times even the performers don't necessarily have the same experience on stage, and they're like, "Oh, I had no idea that happened." Like someone's water bottle will roll across the stage from the audience, right?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, that's not part of the set.
Right. Because you need this back.
Because when we saw Witch in and I don't know if we ever talked about this. I think that you were very kind and nobody.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Yes, my phone went off.
It was my phone. Talk about the water bottle, because there was
someone's water bottle. You know, my phone went off. Did you? I don't know if you noticed. I had it under my thigh.
I knew a phone went off, but I didn't know that was yours.
It was yours. Oh,
oh God.
I had it, and I was pushing down on my thigh, and I couldn't get it to stop. It was me. It was right next to you, but I had it under my thigh. I was pushing down, trying to mute the speaker as much as I could. I swear to God, you'd see me. I thought I had turned it off. So
yeah.
It was like an alarm. It was like, you have to leave for WGN right now. And we remember because we were running late.
Because we were running late.
But I thought I had turned it off, and I'm pushing down, trying to mute it as much. There's a person in front of me. I'm trying to just shove down, push it into the cushion.
I'm
trying to reach down and push the buttons, and I can't get it to stop. It was one of the most dramatic, quiet moments of the production, because that had some intense moments. It's happened to me twice. Once during that production, and once at my mother-in-law's funeral.
Oh, God.
Okay.
I swear to God, I was sitting there.
Oh, my gosh.
No, I was sitting there, and I thought, I go, somebody had to finish speaking, and the pianist had gone to the stage, to the front of the church, and I thought, I didn't know they were going to play Adele.
God.
Yeah, it was my phone. Wow. I was reaching into my phone. Yeah, but fortunately, the swell of the music from the piano was enough to cover that up. So, you would think I would have learned. You would think after my mother-in-law's funeral, I maybe would be in check with my phone. But that happens. People will answer.
Oh, actually, the most spectacular was a show that Nick wrote, Here Comes a Regular. Manny was in it, and I was producing it.
Oh, yeah.
And the set looked like a bar, and where the bathrooms were, you were basically on the set, and someone's phone rang, and he picked it up and just started talking.
Oh my God.
And was like, no, it's a really great show. He talked about, he was clearly having a great time, but he just,
didn't even realize.
Yeah.
Well, didn't realize, but didn't care. Yeah.
It was very environmental.
It was very environmental.
So at that point, do you just stop and just kind of watch and listen, or do you just continue?
No, they just kept going.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Treated it like it was a bar.
No.
It's
you always take the high road. You never stop and look at somebody and say, hey, stop that. Because I think that it's part of the experience. I mean, you don't want to put anybody through anything. I mean, if it goes on forever, obviously somebody's got to stop the person. But people make mistakes all the time.
Yeah.
Can you call them back?
Yeah. Hold on. Come on in, Nick. Nick.
Grab him.
Only
Here Comes a Regular was a show that I co-wrote and directed.
This is my something good right
and
now.
And I was in.
Yeah. Yes.
Where am I on?
Yeah, you're on.
I can't hear it.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. There's a volume control on this.
Road turns
us
off.
I've only been doing this for 33 years.
Okay.
So anyway, in addition to the phone going off, one night during Here Comes a Regular, because when you walked into it was at the Stage Left Theater. When you walk into the theater, it looked like a bar. Some people would walk in not and think the theater was behind it, you know. And so they would sit at the bar, and we'd have to tell them,
oh my God,
this is the set. You can't. Nobody's going to come out and serve you. This is the set for the play. So we had that show was about guys drinking, which shockingly I wrote. So Manny and I and Mike View and Scott Oaken and who else was in that? Mike Byer,
Beaver,
and Todd
Oldman.
Okay, so we're playing these guys. And there was a group of guys who came in, and they'd seen the show already. They loved it, and they came back. And Allison, were you there that night?
I was there every night.
Oh, yeah, you were.
Yeah.
Okay, so these guys, they meant well, but they went out, and they got crap-faced before the show.
Oh, no.
And brought bottles of red wine in with them.
Oh, God.
And when they showed up, and I think you sat them, Allison.
Oh, God.
Yes, I did.
So they walk in, they're loaded. They're completely loaded. And they're sitting. Oh, you know. By the way, that's the night Cochran came to see the show.
No,
are you serious?
No.
Steve Cochran and his mother came to see the show.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
And from where we're, and seriously, the audience was right on top of us. Yep. If you remember, I mean, it's they're seriously you could just step on their feet. So these guys were sitting on the house left side, and one of the guys passes out. Like you see him pass out. And it was such a small theater that the audience was pretty much lit, so you can see everybody.
Sure.
So the guy passes out. We're doing the show. Everything is going along. The guy wakes up and pukes all over himself.
No! Are you serious?
I'm not making this up.
On himself and the floor.
And the floor.
Oh.
Right behind Cochran and his mother.
Oh, God.
So he gets up. Yeah. He's loaded. He gets up, vomit everywhere. And like these guys were saying, the bathroom was located behind the set. So the front door of the bar you had to go through the front door of the bar of the set to go back into the bathroom.
God.
So he walks onto the stage, goes through the front door like he's leaving the bar, puke everywhere, disrupts everything. He walks out, he goes into the bathroom. And so I said to Todd, we kept going, and I said to Todd, who played the bartender, I said, geez, you really overserved that guy.
Oh, yeah.
So we got a laugh out of it, but I was really pissed because I mean I directed the show too, and so I was like,
wow.
And then I don't know if you guys remember this, it turned chaos.
Yeah,
like people just got up and started walking. They were on the phone.
Sure, there's puke on the floor.
Well,
and this is the performance that Steve Cochran was at, and he still thought the show. But no, there many times we've had fun with people in the audience.
Oh yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, it's part of the experience. I mean, they're digging it. I mean, it can get to us at times, but I mean, it's their experience.
I was so mad though.
Yes, I can imagine.
So mad.
Guess who cleaned up the puke?
Allison. Stop it. Did you really?
Yeah, there were.
You're such a good sport.
Yeah.
You act, you produce, you do
it all. Well,
producing
is really glamorous.
The other thing about it was those guys, they were all hammered. The guy who puked, he ended up staying backstage for the rest of the show. We were about halfway through the play, I think. And it ends, it's a very quiet, the end of the play is very emotional and very quiet and very sad. And so, but at that point, it was just like, let's just get through this, because we were trying to get through it.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, and then so after the show, that we were at the stage left, and we used to go to the Nisei, which is a bar right near there. And we go to the Nisei as we want to do after each performance. We go in, and the guys are there.
No!
And they come up to us and go, and the guy who threw up all over himself was there. They all come up, they're like, you guys are awesome, man. That was the best show I've ever seen. I'm like, yeah, that's great. Thanks for puking all over the stage.
Right.
Holy moly.
And walking on the stage and going backstage.
Walks out, goes by. I mean,
it's crazy. Of all the nights.
Yeah. Right.
And Cochran's.
With his birth mom, by the way.
Yeah.
It's like,
trying to impress her.
They have this very strange relationship as it is because she gave him up for adoption and they're trying to build a relationship and they go to a.
Yeah, they go to the. Oh, this is the guy I work with at WGN. This is the kind of thing he does on the when he's not at GN.
Right. Oh, that's fantastic.
Nick, because they're a married couple, can you imagine working on productions all the time with somebody that you're in a relationship with?
Well, I was married to an actress who was at the Factory Theater.
Okay, so
I worked with her many times because if I didn't cast her, she'd be mad.
Oh, boy.
Wait,
okay,
wait,
I don't want to open that can.
Nick, you outed me.
Right.
So, you know, the thing about these guys, I just want to say this really, it's so great to see these guys. I haven't seen these guys in a very, very long time. I don't go out a lot since I stopped boozing. And so I try to, keep away from stuff. But I have worked with these guys. How many times have we worked together? I've directed you guys in
87.
A ton of shows.
Aww.
And they are the best. They are absolutely the best. And Manny and I are we're compadres when it comes to the horror genre. And the stuff that he writes, I directed one of his plays.
Absolutely.
The stuff that he writes is influenced by a lot of darker, crazier stuff.
Okay.
And he and I have that very same sensibility.
That's cool.
So, just in the first time seeing him in the hall, we were just talking about all the horror movies that are out now. And,
Now that brings up an interesting question because Andrea, I'm curious now to see what Nick thinks about if you had a chance to watch. I don't know if you do Netflix, but The Haunting of Hill House.
Oh, yes, awesome. I watched it in 2 days.
I don't know.
I watched it in three.
Have you seen it?
No.
I've seen.
Oh, it's good, man.
Good?
Yeah.
I've seen every episode twice.
It's scary as hell. It's the Haunting of Hill House.
Yes.
Yeah. No,
fantastic.
I've heard of it.
It's good, man.
Did you watch 1 and 10 together?
No, and I was going to do it night, but that was my House of Cards night.
I recommend watching 1 and 10 together as its own standalone.
That makes sense.
It's really good that way. I can't tell you how relieved I am that Nick likes it too, because a lot of people who have been listening to us are like, it's boring, I don't get it.
Are you
kidding me?
No, it's great.
Oh, yeah. It's phenomenal.
It's really great. It's really scary, and it's a nice twist on that classic story.
Oh, right. I want to be Theo's friend. A clenched fist with hair.
And Patty and I text about this all the time, and I'm like, I want the same cast with season 2. You know, even if they don't focus on the cranes, I want the same cast.
They're not going to do that. If they do, the guy who directed this go did the Stephen King where the girl is handcuffed to the bed.
Oh, Gerald's Game.
That's it. He directed that. He did. Have you seen it?
No.
He did a great job with it.
So Mike Flanagan, his wife is Theo. That's his wife, right, Mike? Nick?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
His wife's Theo?
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
I love her.
Yeah.
No, she's spellbounding.
She is fantastic.
Yeah. So
I have to go to a break because there's a Nick D show is coming up next.
What?
My something good is that Nick D came in to talk about the Factory
Theater.
Talk
about vomit.
The dark. No. to celebrate
so many memories.
Manny to my home.
By the way, just from personal experience, yes. I have no doubt in my mind that this is a great play and that everybody should see it.
Yes.
Because these guys do quality work and I love them.
Here's what we should do. The way we did Witch, I was supposed to get on Metro. I'll get on the red line. You drive out to the Factory Theater.
We'll do that for this.
Yes. Yeah. And we'd love
to have you.
Yes.
Let me know. I'll be there.
Let's do it. Yeah.
I'm so glad you came in, Nick. Thank you so much.
I definitely wanted to add to the vomit story. That was it. Because that was the way. I mean, we've had a lot of like audience participation stuff, you know, over the years.
Yeah.
But that was by far the craziest.
That was great.
The absolute craziest.
I'm just glad he came in after I was like, my phone went off during a play. But Nick's like, no.
I got it.
You're forgiven.
No, Patty, the phone doesn't even matter anymore.
No.
Just don't vomit.
Yeah, just don't.
So you're fine.
You know what? I think I got that one down.
I got that one down.
Thank you so much, Nick. Again, everyone go to thefactorytheater.com. The play runs through December 1st, so get to there. The Factory Theater, 1623 West Howard Street. The play is The Darkness After Dawn. Doesn't it sound good?
Yeah.
Because it's dawn, it should not be dark.
I know.
And Allison definitely deserves
the
dawn now.
Right?
I'm just saying.
I do.
And also, get your laundry done by Rinse. More
Thank
in a moment.
You. Thank you. We'll do it.